The next Philosophy Portal course focuses on Hegel's Philosophy of Right, a text which represents Hegel's most mature political notion of rights. The course starts May 18th, 2024. To find out more, visit philosophyportal.online. Hegel's Philosophy of Right approaches a science exploring the political tension between will and world, as well as their collision into family, community, state, and world spirit. The course runs through May and June, with the first class starting May 18th. There will be 5 lectures and discussions hosted by myself, Cadell Last, as well as 2 exegetical reading spaces with philosopher Dimitri Kroimans. You will get access to these courses for a lifetime, as well as an invitation to participate in a student-led conference and the opportunity to submit your own publication for a student-led anthology process. To learn the foundation of Hegel's mature political notion this May and June, sign up now at philosophyportal.online, and I hope to see you on the other side. Did you know that Philosophy Portal is a membership community hosting 4 different live events every month? These events include Concept Cave, a space to learn core concepts; The Edge, a space to explore the unconceptualized; Thought Lab, a space to learn with thought leaders; and Real Talk, a space to get real in personal self-relation. In April 2024, we will be hosting a concept cave on the concept of jouissance; The Edge, on discomfort, with theologian Barry Taylor; a Thought Lab, on sex, evil, and forgiveness, with philosopher Nina Power; and a Real Talk, on living eros, with coach Pamela Von Sabeljar. To learn more or to get involved, sign up at philosophyportal.online. Philosophy Portal also focuses on publishing community works. We have so far published Enter the Alien, inspired by Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit, and Abyssal Eros, inspired by Nietzsche's Thus Spoke Zarathustra. To find out more, visit philosophyportal.online. You can also find my solo books, Global Brain Singularity, focused on the relation between humans and technological singularity; Systems and Subjects, focused on the relation between general system science and continental philosophy; and Sex, Masculinity, and God, a trilogue about sexual energy and theology. You can find all of these works at philosophyportal.online. Welcome to another philosophical conversation. I'm Cadell Last, and I'm here today with philosopher Slavoj Žižek to discuss Christian atheism, how to be a real materialist. First off, welcome to the channel, Slavoj. Everyone who follows my channel, of course, will know who you are. I think first, let's just get into the basic principle of the title Christian atheism, which is, of course, combining two words that many people would presuppose as a contradiction of terms, and just sort of establish what you think's at stake in combining these two terms and why you decided to write this book in the first place.
Well, as I make it clear, if I remember it correctly, in the first chapter of the book, my, under quotation marks, big enemy is the predominant, how should I call them, liberal atheist stance that you find great principles in atheism, and then they combine this with a vulgar materialism, but in reality, these are illusions. So they recognize what they call Christian moral values or whatever, but they claim they want that they want to maintain them just as what Kant would have called regulative ideals without any ontological commitment. You know, let's abandon the basic substance of religious belief. Let's just treat them as beautiful ideals. If I got him correctly, I'm not sure I saw just the title. Even the great brutal materialist, Richard Dawkins, did you follow this? Now, he said somewhere, as a religion, Christianity is nonetheless better than Islam, and so on and so on. I want to abandon this easy this easy approach because I let's just keep the beautiful, sublime ethical content getting rid of the ontological commitments, because I think that if you do this, it's not that you are too materialist, but you are not materialist enough. Why? How? This brings me to my second thesis. This is for many people the hardest paradox, that through materialism, you cannot assert it directly. You must go through religion and, as it were, enact a shift, a subversive reversal, whatever, let's not go into it now, within a religious edifice itself. That and this, of course, I then bring together with Hegel's insight about the truth is the path to truth, or about how Hegel himself already said in many variations what Lacan in French said, la vérité surgit de la méprise. That in some sense, the truth is immanent to méprise, is not misunderstanding, it's more error, but error in an existential sense. It's not that I look there, oh, I didn't see it correctly. Error means that existentially, in your subjective position, you are wrong. And I think that vulgar materialism, the one which doesn't take this path through religion, precisely doesn't involve a really radical change of your subjective position. Now, the third point, which should be to you, but also to many people who take at least a half serious look on my work, the third point is that Christianity is here privileged, that in some sense, Christianity in itself enacts this passage to atheism, that the fundamental event in Christianity, now I'm simplifying it to the utmost, more not to you, you know this, to our public, that the death and death, crucifixion, and then Holy Spirit, return of Christ. This is the most concise formula of atheism, in the sense that it's well known what I'm doing there, that following Hegel, I think that this is unique about Christianity, that all this topic, neo-gnostic, of Jesus Christ returning in person, or however, that we have to wait for that moment. No, Christ in holy, in the dimension called by Christians holy. Which term do you prefer, ghost or spirit?
Spirit, ghost, you use ghost.
I don't know why, but maybe yes. Spirit would have been better because it has more a Hegelian connotation.
I'm sure Hegel would say Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that... the dimension of Holy Spirit is, how to put it, purely self-relating autonomous belief. You don't have belief in something out there. The belief itself is the core.
There's no
of,
God of the beyond.
Yeah, yeah. The belief, but I here I remain in the Christian legacy, but I think against this postmodern, or not even postmodern, you can call now the fashionable term is, if I know it correctly, metamodernism is not the term, no?
Yeah.
Against this metamodernist stance, I think that we should retain the notion of belief in a much more substantial thing than just, you know, oh, do you think that, like the very question, do you think that God exists? Do you think that Do you really believe in God? Is the wrong question, because to put it in Hegel's terms, it involves a certain difference, gap, which is a false one. We are here, God is there, and then do you believe in that or not? Here, although I don't like, but now it's not the time to go into it, Dostoevsky, there is one passage in Brothers Karamazov where Alyosha says very nicely, for me, it was never a question, does Christ exist? Or in this sense, it's belief is the practical question. Is it, can I live as a Christian in Holy Spirit? It's a pseudo problem to ask this question, do I believe in God, and so on and so on. And I must tell you that one of my few followers on this line, okay, primarily it's you, but do you know that there are also theologists who are at least interested in my work? For example, I learned that the, you know, the guy, Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, no? That he is interested in this, and he promised me that he will write a review soon now of my new book, you know. So again, this is how I try to do it, not in the sense of a cheap compromise. Yes, materialism, but you add something. No, my paradox is that to be, as the title of your forthcoming book says, to be a real materialist, you must go through Christianity. It's a modification of belief, but it is an existential modification. Your subjectivity changes, and you know, to amuse more our readers than you, you don't need amusement. You know, I quite by chance, because my wife didn't see it, so okay, we watched together. It's not a great movie, but I only liked one moment. Do you know a movie directed by Robert Redford? I think the title is something about a river runs through it or whatever. Did you see it? Where Brad Pitt plays a self-destructive character. He's beyond redemption, not in the moral sense, he's not evil, but he manages always to get into trouble. People try to help him, but he is lost. We know something horrible will happen to him sooner or later. And when he is finally found dead, beaten by some guys, a priest at his funeral says something simple but very beautiful. He said, the message in when you find a person who is in such a situation, you see that he is, he or she, that's another topic, is beyond help. He simply is on self-destructive path. The truly Christian stance here is not, okay, but let's make a last desperate attempt to convince. No, no. It's simply, your message to him must be simply, I know I can do nothing. All I can give you is my love, solidarity. But not solidarity in this cheap social sense of, you know, a kind of a manipulative help. Like, if I tell you this, maybe you will nonetheless find the strength to get out. No, that even if in your utmost self-destructive path, I keep my love for you. And a good friend of mine drew my attention to one fact that in Matthew, there is a wonderful passage where basically Christ demands this. It is the night before, he knows, he will be crucified next day. It's very strange person. He has to his followers, apostles who are around him, Can you please just stay with me and, like, to be vulgar, not fall asleep? Wake with me. So
fantastic.
Again, it's a desperate moment for Christ. He knows it's the end. And all he wants is, this is the practice of Holy Spirit. All he wants is just, he's not giving them any big, deep lessons. He's not demanding help from them. Just be here. So again, when I talk about belief, I'm not talking about belief in a simple opposition to disbelief. Like, are you just immersed in this city life, or do you think there is another dimension? I'm talking about this existential subjective sense. I talk too much, hit me again.
Oh, perfect. So a few notes I want to emphasize in terms of the 3 points you're emphasizing there. I think that we can come to sort of a perspective here that scientific materialism, or vulgar materialism in the form that sort of Dawkins and the evolutionists were forwarding, is sort of still dependent on a figure of the big other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And in this sense, that what they miss in regards to the error you're talking about, the existential error, I think is best represented in this transition from the logic of there is no big other to there is a non-other. So, like, there is no sexual relationship to there is a non-relationship. And to be able to go through that transition, I think, would be somewhat similar to the structure of religious belief, coming to the understanding of religious belief, there is no God of the beyond, to sort of more the position of Christ in the way you're talking about.
And
finally,
again,
sort
sorry
of
to interrupt you, but it's crucial here. Now, one criticism that I often get is that, but wait a minute, you get this also in Buddhist community, or in some sense in other religions. I don't think you get it anywhere else. And you remember, is it?
Well, I was going to make that point next, and see what you say on this formula. Is that because I think this formula, and I think for the viewers to know that I think this concept of Christian atheism, if we go back and study the I think the you know, the original philosophical materials that could help us better understand your book, Christian Atheism. If we study Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit, specifically those last chapters, I think we could come up with something like the formula. And this, I'll propose it to you, is the truth of religion is Christianity, and the truth of Christianity is atheism. So if we understand that sort of movement, I think that's, you know, anyway, I'll throw it back to you on that point.
But can I add another? I'm sorry if I go into these simple waters, but almost pathetic the stand. You know, did you see, my God, it's an old movie, but there are two versions. I mean, two, a movie and a TV series based on this novel. Did you see, but you are relatively young, so I cannot say when you were younger. Did you see, first, I'm talking about John Le Carré's The Little Drummer Girl. Did you see there is the old from 84 movie, and then there is, I think it's 2018-19, a 6-part TV series. And in both, the crucial moment is the Arab terrorist who wants to detonate a bomb somewhere in Germany, doesn't matter. I absolutely don't follow or agree with his commitment, but there is a deeply tragic scene nonetheless, where truth is on his side. He seduces him voluntarily, although she is employed by Israeli Mossad, probably to helping him to catch him. They spend the night together. She wants to do it. And then in the morning, in a lone house, hut in the middle of a forest, when he awakens, he gets into a panic. He said, my God, I don't see sounds of cows. I don't see hear any cars. So he gets it there already surrounded. And then he confronts her and basically makes her confess without torture, just she's broken down you are not really part of my cause. And then comes a beautiful moment when he realizes that he is betrayed, that he will die. He turns to her and asks her, why did you do this? Are you Jewish? Are you Christian? Were you blackmailed? Were you bribed? Like, he gives her all imaginable options. And he answers, Florence Pugh, who is now popular, plays her, Charlie, called in the novel. She just tells, I am nothing. I don't know what I was doing, and so on. And then the guy doesn't do what you would have expected from an Arab terrorist or whatever. Doesn't try to take revenge in the last second, you know, like, before they get me, I will shoot you. He just gently approaches her, caresses her face, and says, my God, you don't have any belief. You don't believe in anything. I'm sorry for you. And caresses her, like, with full sympathy. Is too vulgar a word here. And then just wait, they break in, they shoot him, you know. Now, I don't agree with this. Of course, I'm not in any sense pro-terrorist with his commitment, but I think that this guy, Khalil, the terrorist, shock is authentic. Because, you know, his idea is not if to truly believe you must be one of us, Islam fundamentalist. His point is just, how can you persist? What are you so that you can persist totally outside commitment, just in daily pleasures and so on and so on? So I think the terrorist here did stumble upon something quite profound. And I think when he says, but you believe in nothing, his point is not, again, but the only true belief is Islam. He is just searching for the trace of any existential commitment. And this is why I recently, talking with some of my Korean friends, I wrote, I think the title was something like Living in the End of the World, a short comment about how, you know, this is such a stance displayed by this heroine. This is more and more the existential stance today, not so only in Western societies, but also South Korea and Japan. Did you see the movie, something like, not Zone of Interest, but A Perfect Life or whatever? The German guy, Wim Wenders, did a movie in Japan with a Japanese actor describing everyday life of a guy who, I don't know, cleans trashes, beans, I don't know, like some totally simple work, but lives a happy life in the sense that he cares about nothing, just small pleasures and so on and so on. And I was told that in South Korea, among millions of people, this is now the predominant attitude. Forget about North Korean threat or whatever. Just try to enjoy your small life without any metaphysical concerns and so on and so on. This, I think, is the position that I cannot accept.
Right. It's kind of just the end result of a certain materialist, I guess, let's say it's the end result of what you're calling a type of vulgar materialism.
Yeah, although the paradox is that here, vulgar materialism can paradoxically rejoin some kind of pseudo-deep spiritual wisdom, you know. Don't crave for anything, find your spiritual satisfaction in modest everyday life and so on and so on. Now I'm coming to your book. Hey guys, those who read me, read Enter the Alien.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
So, because
you know, maybe if we, and I'm now talking bombastically, if we humans are so screwed up that we cannot, many of us cannot arrive at this deep commitment, the least so-called new right religious fundamentalists, they are for me...
That's what just, I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, they are for me just, how should I put it, a theological version of vulgar materialism.
So that's what I wanted to point towards.
Yeah, that vulgar materialist thinks, what's the problem? Our subjective freedom is just, as they say, user's illusion. We are just whatever, DNA, subparticles, blah, blah, blah. Do you know that, and I've spoken with some of them, this true fanatically fundamentalist religious guys, for them, they precisely, no matter how much they bluff, they are not in the Holy Spirit, as we would say. They are, for them, religious insight is a simple scientific fact. That's how it is. This can also assume a stupid version of literal reading of the Bible, you know, or a scientific Bible. For example, I wonder if we already talked about it. I remember that I, in the last 5-10 years, spoke with two people. One was a more intelligent Christian. The other guy was also intelligent, but pure fundamentalist. And ask them, I'm sorry if you know this, but probably our viewers don't know this, a simple question. You know, this was the era of the Turin Shroud. Is this really a trace of Christ? Because there are some stains that, what if this really is Christ's blood? No. And I was pretty provocative. I told them, if, because, you know, it was proven conclusively that it was made in 13th, 14th century. But now there is a counter argument that if you have the cloth made from certain material which grows in the Middle East, it is still possible that the cloth is from year zero or 33. Okay, so what fascinated me is that the different answers that I got, I asked them a more concrete question. If we presume that the Turin Shroud is true, and that dark couple of dark stains are really remnants of Christ's blood, what do you think about the idea? Let's just scratch a part of it and do a DNA analysis. Then we will be possible to answer empirically the question, like, did Holy Mary, Christ's mother, did she have sex with another person, or blah, 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 Immaculate Conception? And it's interesting that the intelligent Christian, not fundamentalist, was horrified at this idea. He even said, this is a wrong approach. It's wrong to do this. It has to remain a pure belief. You know what the fundamentalist answered me? She accepted this topic. He said, perfect, let's do it if the church will allow it. And I can tell you what we will discover, that since God doesn't have a DNA, that The DNA will be simply redoubled Mary's DNA. But what I found so horrible is how he was really thinking about this in here, the most radical fundamentalist, in purely positive scientific terms. So I think, just to conclude, that it's very important that in the state we are in today, with this globalized ontological indifference, maybe only aliens can awaken us, to put it like this. You know, it must be the shock of a real otherness. That's why.
Absolutely.
That's so why this is
perfect, though.
Now it may be time that I let you to say a word.
So this is perfect, though. Like, yeah. I just want to emphasize, like, from your book, like what you're emphasizing there with the Turin Shroud, to me sounds like a great example of a point you try to make in the book between the gap that separates objective reality from the transcendental approach.
Yeah.
And then, like, sort of the real question I wanted to zero in on here in regards to you know, the atheist core of Christianity is this, I think, mega important distinction that you highlight in the book. So I'm just going to highlight this distinction and
yeah.
then let you go. So the first distinction, which I would take to be the, let's say, the false fundamentalist move, is the principle God became man so that man will become God. Whereas the emphasis that you always emphasize is the fall from God is a fall of and in God himself. And
yeah.
What this distinction, what's at stake in this distinction? Because I think what you say in the preface, which I really like, is that Christianity is unique, not because it's trying to elevate humans to God through pious
yeah.
activity, not leaving behind sinful life, but rather transposing the God, rather transposing the gap that separates God from man into God himself. And I think
that's
this
Hegel
mega
says,
distinction,
this
this
is
is the
one
most
of the
important.
Most beautiful quote from Hegel, I think, from Phenomenology.
Yes, it is. But I think it's mega. I think it's the most important theological distinction that
yes,
you're bringing to the
yes.
table, and you're
Totally
running
agree.
With it throughout
Yes.
the book. And I really appreciate that.
And
So
let's go into another dimension. Although I have big problems with Gnosticism, mysticism, but nonetheless, they are onto something, you know, which mystics. They are the only ones who, I think, really see it. This late medieval European tradition, so-called Rhine, the German river, Rhine mystics, you must go all the way from Meister Eckhart to, of course, then Jacob Böhme and so on. They see this clearly, that in some sense, there is no God without man. But now we come to a crucial point. Not in this vulgar materialist way. Yeah, of course, because God is nothing but man's imagination, but more rather that God who created man is retroactively reborn in man. Only through man, God comes back with himself, which is why this point is so traumatic for some critics of Marxism and Hegel. I don't know it by far, but I found some crazy right-wing guy, his podcast, where he claims that in a radically anti-Marxist way, that the origin of all evil in modern world, and he named the sources of this evil, Kant, but more Hegel, Marx, Nietzsche, Freud, and then he goes even into, in a totally crazy way, Stalin, Hitler, and so on, is this late medieval mysticism, and he gets this
correct. Are you talking about James Lindsay?
Maybe, I'm not sure.
Okay, sorry, go on.
No, but sorry, this comes with old age. But what I like so much is that he sees this line, because, you know, Hegel does say that Jacob Böhme is the first true German philosopher. Why? Precisely because, as what you said, he sees the arrival of man not as something like God is up there, blah, 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 then he creates man, but who cares, you know? And you know where comes the truly dialectical point? Here, your work enters. Now, a stupid reader would have thought, but wait a minute, if aliens come, doesn't this mean Christianity is over? You know, in the sense of, for Christianity, God exists through man. But how then do you deal with alien life? No, I think there you are confronted with the paradoxical core of Christianity. You know, I want Christianity without this stupid heliocentric stance, sorry, humano-anthropocentric stance that, you know, as if God put all the bets on us and so on. I would lie at my...
Well, he rolled the dice on many planets.
Yeah.
Because so I know you always, I know you always say with Einstein, God doesn't play dice. You say, well, don't tell God what to do. I think he's just rolling the dice, you know?
But this was Neil Bohr, yeah, who gave the proper answer to this one. No, but what I want to say is that here, this may surprise you. I'm now in contact with some great names of contemporary writers on quantum physics, or rather mechanics. And I don't know what will come out of this, but it's fascinating.
Lee Smolin's probably one of the on the leading edge, I
yes,
would say.
Through that other guy, Sean
Carlo
Carroll.
Ravelli.
And Ravelli, I'm in contact with Ravelli, but through the problem is we almost already arranged a conversation with Lee Smolin. The problem is what I heard that, you know, that he is very, very ill now. I don't know what cancer, leukemia, whatever, but like, it's a problem.
But I think let me say this about Lee Smolin, because I've been following his work for a long time, especially in his book, he has the three paths to quantum gravity. And let me propose these three paths to you, because I think you're walking the third path of quantum gravity. Oh. Because he said the first path of quantum gravity is basically like quantum mechanics sublating general relativity. The second path is where general relativity sublates quantum mechanics.
Yep.
But the third path is not capable to be sort of, let's say, cordoned off by sort of the main paradigms of physics,
yeah,
but requires philosophical, spiritual reflection, including questions of religion, including questions of, let's say, idealism and materialism. And I think that this third path, which has not gotten, this third path, which has not been explored or supported institutionally, I think that in some sense, your philosophy is laying the groundwork for this third path.
So maybe both of us, although I'm part of an institution, but I'm a pure researcher. I'm not part of any academic machinery proper. And you know, maybe this, although it may appear superficially that we are at a disadvantage, who knows, maybe this will turn to be our advantage. Because there is something in social sciences with this cancel culture, political correctness, and on. In pure sciences, even, this new conformism of institutions is terrifying.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
No, so like the end of my doctoral thesis, I try to also approach this issue of quantum gravity, but
the doctoral thesis, you see, this is what already you did. This is not a real material.
This is already published, Global Brain Singularity. But the idea there with this third path of quantum gravity is that it's not like the third path has to reflectively include the historical social community itself. That and if you don't include the historical social community itself, and this is what the physicists so I'll throw this back to you, is that my, and then we'll get into the ontological implications of quantum physics.
Yeah.
But the problem is in the last 100 years, the smartest people on the planet have been dedicated to trying to resolve the question of quantum gravity, but they haven't been able to do it. So it's not a question of intelligence, it's a question of the philosophical framing. And if they don't get the philosophical, and I think that this is the main thing, and this is the question I'll throw to you is, and which I think you make clear in this book, Christian and Atheism, is it's this move from, let's say, Descartes and classical physics, where you have this problem of a deceiving God, laws without exception, to Hegel and quantum physics, where you have God who is himself deceived, where you universalize the exception and it escapes control. But this move is so precise. So I want people, even if they're in the materialist sciences, to know that this philosophical foundation you're providing, which I think is the third path of quantum gravity, is a move from Descartes to Hegel, classical physics to quantum physics. But I'll leave it to you with that.
Although, you know, can I let's begin now. I will soon get tired, but I want to use opportunity. Let's begin now by a little bit of foresight of me questioning you. You know, when you said Hegel's logic and so on, I will ask you a very primitive, simple question, but sometimes one has to raise them. They are difficult. My question is, I'm dealing with this in my new manuscript on which I'm working. The difference between Robert Brandom and Pippin. Basically, I don't agree with any of them. But there is one difference. Pippin is a more Kantian transcendentalist. Pippin, in his new book, I don't know if it already appeared. I got just the digital proof version. Pippin's point is that Hegel's logic is, under quotation mark, eternal. It's transhistorical, it's the eternal frame of categories for all possible knowledge of humanity, whatever. And then Pippin goes so far to even claim that why are after logic, nature and spirit? That this is contingent. It could have been different. Like maybe he would have said, okay, there are aliens. Okay, we are in contact with them. They will be a totally new form of life, which will not fit our, what we see as our human spirituality. But he would have said, you know, here I see his Kantian approach that the only truly eternal thing is logic. And that nature and human history, spirit, are just two empirically given domains where you can apply logic. While Brandom is more radically historical, his point is that nonetheless, you cannot say here is eternal logic, then we have their nature. Okay, let's apply logic to nature or whatever and history, but that with new advances in science, in whatever, or in our experience, aliens, logical category themselves would be affected. Now I ask you, what is your position here? I would just like to know it. A simple
Sure.
question.
Sure. So I've actually,
It's obvious that if aliens enter, it will be unthinkably radical. But let's be more modest. Do you think that I'm tempted to say a no, but you know more probably than me here. What do
Okay,
you
so I
think? No, what do you think? Do you think that Hegel's logic or the categories there, all of them in their structure of syllogism, category, is still strong enough to serve as a frame for quantum physics? Or have we to change, rewrite the logic? Simple question. That's my
Yeah, simple question. Well,
yeah.
that's so Let me, so I do try to approach this in the upcoming philosophy portal. Not, I mean, I frame it this as a question in the upcoming anthology Logic for the Global Brain. And so I think it's a fantastic question. The first thing I'll say, and I've got 2 points to make, is the first is sort of building on sort of a point you make in Christian atheism, which is that I would say logic's eternity has to be historicized in the way that you're saying with the fourth.
Depends. And you, sorry, yeah. It's the same.
So that's crucial.
To interrupt you, but it's the same paradox as that of my title. Now we come at the metaphysically deepest point. You said eternal logic should be historicized.
Yeah.
But not in the vulgar sense of part of, no, no. It's still eternal, but eternity
yes.
is
not in a historicist sense. Not in a historicist sense.
Should be historicized.
But no? Like exactly, so like the idea of the fourth model of the block universe model, the fourth temporal model, where you rewrite the past and the future in the present.
Yeah, yeah.
And so basically it's the event of the alien where the rewriting of the past and the future would take place.
Yeah, yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah,
yeah. But now this is, but now even I would say on a deeper level. And this is the point I try to make in Logic for the Global Brain is, and this is, I generalize, you could say it in the alien context, but I would say you could also say it in the post-human context.
Yeah.
To me, it's about the status of contradiction. To me, in the logic for the global, the science of yeah. logic, it's all about the status of contradiction as positive. And the question, and I think even like we could see a lot of Deleuzian philosophy and the idea of the becoming animal is yeah. sort of like maybe a symptom of the historicity of Hegel's logic, in the sense that do we transcend the logic of contradiction itself on the level of body spirit? So like when you emphasize, for example, that Christianity embodies the contradiction of spirit becoming body,
yeah.
and the body and the material body is on the yeah. same level as spirit, this contradiction is the contradiction that I think Hegel's logic is most useful for on the level of the doctrine of concept,
yeah.
subjective becoming.
Yeah.
And is this contradiction itself historicized?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's
Precisely.
My question.
Yeah.
That's my question.
Now I will tell you something horrible. I am so weak that we will have to stop slowly. But
okay.
I am so weak because I'm saying this sincerely. In all the podcasts that I had in last year, I never got so much invested. So I will tell you what I will do now. I will, and you can use this. I'm saying this for the public. I will go to my apartment. I will take 2-3 Xanaxes to calm myself down. And then I will start to write about this, Enter the Alien, you know. So it's good that we did this publicly, because if I look deep into my evil, you know, and you know what's the only real proof that I appreciate you? It's dirty paradox. It's that I envy you, hate you, and my dream would have been, how couldn't I see this myself? So I will not do it. That's why it's good that you have me now on tape, you know. My dream would be to steal your ideas and then maybe in my next book put a small, you know, this ultimate lie, footnote. After I finish this book, I learned that my friend Tadel had some similar ideas, blah, blah, after I, you know, this typical way of lying and exploiting, you know. So that's what I will do now. Sorry, this was too much. So let's, the only solution proposal is this one. Maybe even in 2-3 months or before, allow me to look into your stuff and
yeah.
then we will definitely repeat this conversation.
Fantastic.
With me being your Stalinist interrogator, you know, and like
okay.
I will to give a boost to your thinking, you know, I will, like, let's say these are the keys to Gulag, no? I would say, like, tell me
I
what
was
you
I had
think.
to mention the gulag. I was going to mention the gulag. Yeah, I knew that was always a potential threat. Yeah. No,
Yeah.
no, but I.
Okay. So don't kill me. I am at the end now. You see,
All
this
right.
is
All right.
my, but I'm very grateful to you. And let's begin to really work in.
Sounds good.
No,
So
no, I don't believe in this collective work that, you know, you sit at the table and debate, blah, blah. No, I believe in this shock thinking. Like for me, you talk with somebody and he or she says something tremendous. And then you have to say, now I step back and I have to put it down before it disappears. That's for me true collaboration. I don't believe in this literal collective thinking, you know, brainstorming at its most stupid.
All right.
So,
well,
pardon
I'll,
me,
I'll
I
let
have
I'll
to
let you go.
rest now,
I don't want you to. Yeah.
But I have to stop now. But my God, we really, I think, are onto something, because you know where is the second point that I find important in what you are doing, because I noticed this, how, although we may appear to talk about alien civilizations, ontology, blah, blah, nonetheless, there is always a paradoxical short circuit, direct contact between these eternal questions and political issues today. You clearly see this also. Things are changing. I think that here I agree with you. It's not that, as Heideggerians would have put it all too easily, technique science is just the application of some a priori structure of disclosure of being, is that in true radical changes, we, in the most radical sense, my innermost spiritual sense, also will have to change. And I think we don't, as you hinted at some point, we don't even have to talk only about literally aliens. It's much more radical. It's even with the, for example, here I agree with some commentators who say, till now, the question of freedom and so on, determinism, the are we fully determined, was an abstract theoretical question. We could be deconstructionists, claim blah, 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 we could be determinists, but when we talk and interact, we interacted in a traditional, rational, subjective way. You say an argument, you try to convince me, I give my own, I try, but with the latest advances in brain studies and all that, this gap is disappearing. Because today, to talk about what is freedom is not just a social question. No, it's becoming a scientific question. How our brain works, is there a space for freedom there, and so on, you know. So we live in an extraordinary time where the highest metaphysical questions concern our daily life, literally.
So let me, could you have time for a quick story? Just one last point.
Okay.
So the next class at Philosophy Portal, we're going to be teaching the philosophy of right, which I think has a lot to do with basically the question of freedom.
Yeah.
And the question of freedom as political, as well as scientific.
Yeah.
And I think that contemporary sciences, in the way that we've been critiquing them,
yeah,
sort of vulgar materialist
yeah,
sciences,
yeah,
they always approach the question of freedom with reference to studies that only have to do with animals. Like, for example, I study baboons or I study other creatures,
and then I see
that the neuronal connections, and
yeah,
I can
yeah.
see that the decision the baboon makes is already predetermined by the neuronal connections.
Yeah, yeah,
and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the question I think that Hegel's bringing to us in the philosophy of right is that, no, it's an imminent socio-political issue that will also get enwrapped in sort of material science in a historical way, which I don't think is being approached in the mainstream discussions about freedom and determinism. So
no,
I think to that point, it's essential that we approach this.
But again, to privately conclude, I'm really sad. I will try to check it up again. What's happening with Lee Smolin? What I heard is very sad. I'm mentioning this publicly. If this will reach him, I wish him all the best, and I hope that I was a victim of exaggerated rumors, that it's not so bad.
All right, well, I'll let you go. Thanks for your time and for everyone watching. Christian Atheism.
We keep in touch. Don't forget immediately now, even before you go to the toilet to urinate or what you do now, send me the references of your Enter the Alien.
I will. I will.
Okay. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
All right. Peace out.
The next Philosophy Portal course focuses on Hegel's philosophy of right, a text which represents Hegel's most mature political notion of rights. The course starts May 18th, 2024. To find out more, visit philosophyportal.online. Hegel's philosophy of right approaches a science exploring the political tension between will and world, as well as their collision into family, community, state, and world spirit. The course runs through May and June, with the first class starting May 18th. There will be 5 lectures and discussions hosted by myself, Cadell Last, as well as 2 exegetical reading spaces with philosopher Dimitri Kroimans. You will get access to these courses for a lifetime, as well as an invitation to participate in a student-led conference and the opportunity to submit your own publication for a student-led anthology process. To learn the foundation of Hegel's mature political notion this May and June, sign up now at philosophyportal.online, and I hope to see you on the other side. Did you know that Philosophy Portal is a membership community hosting 4 different live events every month? These events include Concept Cave, a space to learn core concepts, The Edge, a space to explore the unconceptualized, Thought Lab, a space to learn with thought leaders, and Real Talk, a space to get real in personal self-relation. In April 2024, we will be hosting a concept cave on the concept of jouissance, The Edge on discomfort with theologian Barry Taylor, a thought lab on sex, evil, and forgiveness with philosopher Nina Power, and a real talk on living eros with coach Pamela Von Sabeljar. To learn more or to get involved, sign up at philosophyportal.online. Philosophy Portal also focuses on publishing community works. We have so far published Enter the Alien, inspired by Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit, and Abyssal Arrows, inspired by Nietzsche's Thus Spoke Zarathustra. To find out more, visit philosophyportal.online. You can also find my solo books, Global Brain Singularity, focused on the relation between humans and technological singularity, Systems and Subjects, focused on the relation between general system science and continental philosophy, and Sex, Masculinity, and God, a trialogue about sexual energy and theology. You can find all of these works at philosophyportal.online.